If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Just avoid that appearance of things. You know, people, investors have to know, like, and trust you. And if there's anything that causes them to doubt their trust in you, then you need to drop that. So,
welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Brandon Abbott has been investing in real estate since 2010. He specializes in asset procurement and management, and he brings specialized knowledge when finding, underwriting, and managing assets. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Hey, Samuel. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, man, this is great. This is great. You're one of my favorite cities, Columbia, South Carolina. And that I'd love to hear, you know, about your market as a whole, you know, kind of what where you see things going there. But before we get into all that, of course, I would love to really hear the same questions I ask everybody who comes on. Where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, definitely. I always love to share my story, mostly to inspire those that are looking to get into real estate and, you know, kind of curb the fears of getting started. So anybody can do it. And the biggest difference between people that do and people that don't are people that take action. And so that's the biggest part of this whole story. So I was a residential contractor builder in Greenville, South Carolina, pre-2008 in the housing crash. So I had a grading company, framing company, and was a GC. So heavily invested in single family. So that was a, you know, that's kind of where I cut my teeth. I was in my mid-20s, you know, living large, you know, doing well, young, you know, married, you know, just loving life. Obviously, 2008 changed all that. So, you know, that was a paradigm shift, if you will, into cash flows and leverage usage. So I was highly leveraged, you know, building a business, buying equipment, bulldozers, excavators, all the rest of it. And then cash flow stops just because nobody was lending money. So regardless of how many contracts I had out, nobody could execute them because they could not get loans. So I very quickly learned the value of cash flow and also quickly learned the, you know, the downsides of leverage. So I actually, you know, had to file bankruptcy in 2008 and start from scratch, go to zero and reset. So it was a very interesting, you know, time in my life, to be sure. And then, but that was really the moment in my life where I, like I said, I recognized cash flow and I started looking at rental properties and self-storage, just understanding that in a down economy, everybody has to live somewhere. And if they can't get a mortgage or they can't buy a house or they're foreclosed on, they will live somewhere. And that somewhere is rental properties. And so that was the moment where I recognized the value of rental income and multifamily, but didn't really execute that until many years later. So that's kind of where the, you know, where my mindset got going down the road of cash flow and rental income.
Right. So you saw that, hey, this is a possibility, but didn't it took you a couple of years to kind of get around to actually investing in it? Or what did that look like?
Yeah. So mainly because of my financial situation, having to start from scratch, you know, I mean, at that point I had three daughters. I have four now. My third was brand new, you know, that was like the week we were having to file bankruptcy and, you know, everything else. And so it was a stressful time. You know, but those are growth periods and, you know, you make a lot of ground up on those times. But I was working third shift at the gas station, working at UPS, still trying to do some contracting work, you know, on the side. And then, you know, I ended up starting a food vending business just to make money in the meantime. And then eventually got into insurance adjusting. And that really honed my estimating skills and construction knowledge and did that for 8 years as a claims manager in the Southeast.
Wow.
So, and you know, that has helped me a lot in the multifamily space. So then fast forward, I think it was 2017 or 18, my current business partner, Dan Hanford, we went to church together. We knew each other, but just kind of loose acquaintances. And he wanted to go to take his wife to New York City on a day trip, just charter a plane and go up there and just spend the day and come back. So we dropped our kids off at school. All our kids go to the same school. And drove her to the airport, about a 10-minute drive, hopped on a plane in New York in a couple hours and, you know, spent the day there. And on the trip, Dan was telling me he's in medical as his background, and he was trying to look for ways to offset the tax implications and was looking at multifamily. So he's explaining to me this whole, you know, industry of multifamily and buying apartments. And it was really outside of my scope of thinking at that point in time. You know, just, you don't really think, oh, I can buy an apartment complex. You know, you're thinking a house or a duplex or whatever. And he was explaining it to me, and all of that thought process that had begun back in 2008 came rushing back, and it just, all the light bulbs went off. And so I got back from that trip and just downloaded, you know, podcasts, books, and just everything I could. And then went back to Dan, I think it was the next week, and said, let's do this. And so that's kind of how we got started at passiveinvesting.com.
Gotcha. No, that's super cool. That's super cool. So this was 2017 when you guys really cranked this up?
Yeah, I think 2018 was really our first year officially as passiveinvesting.com.
Gotcha. Okay. That's awesome. And how many assets under management do you guys have now?
We currently are right at 3,000 doors, and I think it's 380 million portfolio value, and just at 2,781 plus doors acquired so far.
Wow, that's awesome, man. And I mean, and good for you. I think your story, like you said, when you started, resonates with a lot of people. I mean, what did you say? Work third shift at a gas station?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you're the father of children, you got to do whatever it takes to make money and until something else pans out. And so I didn't stop doing what I want to do or striving for a goal. But in the meantime, yeah, you know, so many people just stop and wait for the perfect opportunity. You know, you got to keep, you know, treading water until that opportunity comes along. So, you know, whatever it takes has always been my motto.
Absolutely. And I mean, and there's a lot of mindset that goes into that too. I mean, you know, I'm not all mindset, but I think there is some of that stuff where you go, look, you know, I may be working third shift at a gas station, but I'm capable of so much more, and I will find a way, you know, to obviously scale up like you guys have. So having that confidence in yourself to move forward, I think is admirable. So good for you. That's fantastic. In the scaling process, what are some things you guys have done right and maybe some things you guys have done wrong that, you know, you could share with us?
Yeah. So the biggest thing that I think is a detriment to people as they want to scale is thinking too small. And I know you've heard this and that, you know, like you said, you're not big into mindset. I'm not big into mindset. I'm not that person that needs inspirational quotes to get me going. I'm self-motivated. It's just the way I roll.
Sure.
But that being said, you know, I've seen the progression of my mindset on how much I can achieve grow. And so if you go ahead and think to the farthest extreme, you know, and that's achievable, you know, you can be a Blackstone or a Gray Star. There's no reason why you can't. They did it and you can too. And to think, oh, that's just, you know, somebody else's, you know, dream or somebody else's achievement is to sell yourself short. And so I think that's the biggest key to scaling is understanding that it's a possibility and is very achievable if you put the work behind it. So that I would say is the biggest key to that. And then the next one is having great partners. I can't even place value on that. We are very organic at passiveinvesting.com. So you have Dan Hanford, Danny Randazzo, and myself. We all came together. I explained how Dan and I kind of got working together, and Danny was in a mentor group with Dan. And we had met and discussed things, and we had looked at a property in Charleston, and Danny lived in Charleston. So we said, hey, let's team up. And he's, you know, he does underwriting and financials. I am, you know, very tangible asset, you know, so that's why I'm in acquisitions and touring the property, looking at CapEx budgets and construction. And Dan is the marketing guy, you know, so he's, you know, all about the podcast and the platform and everything and the investor relations. So it just works so well. We all can do what the other does, but not as well as the you know, managing partner of that is over that aspect. So, and it's, we get along on a personal level. We made it a point to get together with the wives as well before we partnered up to make sure everybody was cohesive and that there was no, you know, chemistry issues there on, even on, you know, like the wife level, you know, cause they're going to be hanging out and talking. So You got to make sure all that is copacetic before you get into a business that you're going to be, you know, tied to someone for multiple years. So that's a big key.
Right, right. That, yeah, and that's something that you guys have gotten right out of the gate, which I think is like you said, a big key. What's something, if you could rewind 2 years, what's something that maybe would have sped up your progress or been a heartache maybe that you could have avoided as you scaled?
You know, we did a big shift early on from, you know, the heavy value add and being vertically integrated. So, you know, first start out, you're doing everything, you know, I built a whole construction company in year one, you know, from the ground up to start doing our renovations on our apartments. And we quickly learned that that's really not the business we wanted to be in. And it was taking all of our time, you know, so I need to be focused on buying more properties, not renovating the ones that we have. I can hire a contractor to do that. And yes, I can do it for cheaper, but there's the return on time value that you have to take into consideration. So that was one big one that we just decided quickly to not be vertically integrated. We, you know, that doesn't mean that on down the road, we may not have a department that has that up, but early on when it's just us, the three of us, you know, and I'm, you know, ordering materials or, you know, scheduling and talking to the on-site managers, it just was a poor use of time. So that was a very good one. And then, you know, we've been fortunate to not have a lot of big oopses. So I can say that, you know, and kind of, I don't want to say knock on wood, but, you know, I can be thankful that we haven't had a lot. The big things that I would point out in the multifamily space, for those of you interested, is just, you know, you can make some big mistakes when it comes to taxes, property taxes, and how the county assesses them. And that can really hurt you in the long run. And then another thing that we learned, so back to the taxes, you know, definitely I would recommend getting a tax consultant and not doing it yourself. As much knowledge as you think you have, you're not somebody that does it every day and you don't know as much as a tax professional. So I would definitely recommend that. And then as far as value add, so many people are like, they don't understand the ambiance of a neighborhood or the feel of a neighborhood within a submarket. So, you know, you can put granite and stainless appliances and nice floors all you want and repaint it, but that neighborhood has a reputation already in the submarket, and that doesn't change immediately. That takes time. So your stabilization may be longer. It's not just a numbers game. There's a whole other nuance to this that you have to take into consideration. So, you know, and we've experienced that. And so we shifted very quickly out of kind of the C class and where you're dealing with reputation of property into B class and A class to avoid those types of situations.
Right. I think that's interesting, you know, going all the way back to the, and you've given some awesome, awesome pointers here, but it's like, you know, I was doing a lot of fix and flip, gosh, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, doing tons of fix and flip. And you could find that you can save quite a bit on materials if you're running back and forth to the different places and picking up materials and dropping it off to the guys versus having them go buy it. But what's that 20%, you know, markup they might put on materials worth as it compares to maybe your time? So sure. In your case, you know, obviously the numbers just have a couple extra zeros attached to it versus a single family flip. But I mean, you know, ordering material and saying, well, I can source it from here versus there and I can save 10% on it, you know, maybe that's not worth it. But with that, I think you also have to have some, you have to have some traction underneath you and have income generating properties in order to offset the additional expense. So was that kind of a, was, you know, which one comes first? Was that kind of a hard jump for you when you stepped out of that role?
It was and it wasn't. So it was one of those things. I built the company up and it had, you know, ended up being a pretty big company in year one. And so I pretty much handed that off to the manager that I had hired and just gave him the company for nothing. Wow. And so they still work for us, but it's completely separate. They bid alongside any other contractor, but the benefit. So the reason I did that is because they took all the supply chain that I had already built and put it in, and they were doing things for a third of what the competition was doing it for, because the competition was not tapping into the scale or the amount or volume of materials ordered. And then we focused in on making our renovations very similar across our whole portfolio so we could buy in bulk. So flooring contractors, flooring manufacturers, appliance manufacturers, we just went to them. I went to them early on and said, hey, I'm going to buy, you know, 1 million square feet next year. What are you going to do for me? And just oh, that's not good enough. Sorry. You know, and I mean, I really was that way and just kind of bulldozed them and bullied them into getting the prices that I want and said, okay, well, if you can't meet my price, we'll go somewhere else. And cabinets, I mean, you wouldn't believe the prices that we get on cabinets and flooring. I mean, you know, it's just phenomenal. So I didn't want to lose all that, but at the same time, and this also played into, I'll speak to appearance of things. We didn't want it to appear that a managing partner was also profiting off of business that was being hired by the operator, if that makes sense. So here we have investors, right? And we purchase a property and then we're hiring myself as the contractor, and that company was, we didn't want it to look like right. It was making profit. And so it looked like I was double dipping. So for that reason, also, we decided to drop that leg and just to move it away. And then that now we require three bids, even if it's this other company, which, you know, I will name drop them, Renova. If anybody's looking for an apartment contracting firm, they've moved on to other operators. They're in multiple states now. And you can't find a cheaper or better company that does that. So the name and the whole image and everything I put in place and then handed it over to them. So they're a great company now.
Right. No, that's fascinating. You made a great point there, because if it is a separate LLC that is then billing back you guys as the sponsor, and yet you own portions of both companies,
yeah,
you know, that and not that you were, but it could always give somebody the opportunity to say, hey, wait, like, you know, you're billing us too much. And so now we as limited partners aren't making as much money because you're taking the padding on the other side.
Correct. And that we weren't taking a profit on, I was not taking it, and we had the books to back it up, but it's the whole, just avoid that appearance of things. You know, people, investors have to know, like, and trust you. And if there's anything that causes them to doubt their trust in you, then you need to drop that. So
that's a key. If you're listening to this, like, that's a key. Just write that one down. I mean, it's the whole avoid the appearance of evil, you know, like just. We don't want questions in this. And so it's not worth it. Even if there, you know, were profit to be had, it's not worth it. And also, I think it was a strategic play. Like, how strategic for you to get that off your desk and just say, all right, you guys handle this.
Oh, it was huge, because you're talking about payroll, HR, you know, the whole nine, taxes and accounting. And it's like, oh my word, I'm having to deal with cash flow issues. It's like, I don't need this. I don't want this. You know, I didn't get into this to have another job. And, you know, I came from construction, so I understand it, but, you know, I didn't want to go back there. And so it was nice to let that go.
Oh, for sure. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure that was a great relief. And how was that when you handed the keys over to your manager, you know, that was on staff with you before? You said, hey man, here's a fully functional company. Have at it. It's yours. What was that conversation like?
Yeah. So, you know, there was actually two managers. So they kind of took it over together, and I just said, you know, hey, we've got to separate. You can still keep doing our work as long as your bid is better. I gave them the branding, business coach, and an equity partner as well to help them with cash flow. So it was a good deal, but it was people that I've worked with a long time. I actually worked with them both in the insurance industry. I trained both of them as the claims manager. And so I knew their work ethic. I knew their knowledge base. They knew what they were doing. They're up, you know, standing guys and work hard. So I didn't mind doing that. And, you know, if I can help someone else, you know, achieve a lifestyle that's better than what they have, and it doesn't, you know, and I can do that without any skin off my back, then why not? You know, I mean, that's a great thing. And yes, I could have charged them, but it was a clean break. I just needed to do it quickly. And it's like, you know, I don't want ties to that anymore and just break free. And so they're, you know, I hope that they are able to turn it into a multimillion dollar company one day.
So. Right. Well, it sounds like they're on their way. If they're in multiple states, working for other sponsors and other you know, operators, that's they're well on their way. Was that a financial loss for you? You know, because it took you quite a bit, I would assume, resources to develop that back end or develop that company, and then just to hand it over and say it's all yours. Like, how did you swallow that pill?
Yeah. So I built it all with no debt. The only thing I had was really a couple of work trucks and, you know, a few pieces of equipment, which I said to them, the only thing I ask from you is that I walk away from this clean.
Right.
So I don't want, you know, to be holding any debt from this. So you have to assume the trucks and you have to assume, you know, any other equipment. So they did that. I gave them time to do that because they had to get their feet under them and get cash flows going. So I gave them, you know, I think 12 months actually to kind of get that. They've made the payments and everything, but I kept it in my name and then, you know, just moved it out. So yeah, I walked away with no loss. Just That's an awesome. Even break, you know, kind of where I started the whole thing. But you know, the money that, you know, I'm in multifamily, I'm not in construction anymore. So it was just the way to go.
Right. And I think that's super cool. The willingness, one, to put all that effort in to grow a company, because that takes a lot of your time that you'll never get back. But then also the courage to know when to pivot and just say, nope, this isn't working. Left turn, like an immediate 90-degree turn. And that's it. So I think that's a super key that if somebody's listening, like take that and be willing to make those hard decisions. Cause I'm sure that wasn't an overnight decision.
No, I mean, it's something we discussed as partners and just thought it was best for passiveinvesting.com, you know, and our whole image, you know, we're big on integrity, you know, and it just needed to happen, you know, but all that I learned from doing that and renovating units is invaluable. Even though I don't run that company anymore, that knowledge base is still there. And I can apply it to going into other CapEx projects. And so, and when dealing with contractors, I have a high knowledge that they're not going to slide anything by me. I know what I'm talking about. And you know, you're not going to slide one by. It's just not going to happen.
Right, so. Right. Yeah. That's something you can't give away with the company. So that's really cool. Brandon, let's jump into the final four here. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Take action. I see it so many times where people, they go listen to gurus or they go to this seminar, or they buy this coaching product and they never do anything with it. And I have people come to me, hey, can you help me get started? And I'll gladly do so. I'll send them an email or do this or do that. And then they keep coming back, you know, they just haven't taken the step. And I'm a burn the ships type of person. If you know that story, you know, they're invading this island and, you know, there's no retreat possible. And so the only way to, you know, the general's only way to encourage his soldiers that there's no retreat is to burn all the ships. It's like, we're not leaving here unless we destroy the enemy. And that's my mentality. When I started out, I quit my job before we had our first property under contract. So it was a step of faith, but it's like, I need to put 100% towards this. And I have 100% faith that this is going to happen. And, you know, that's just the way I do things. So take action and aim high would be the number one thing.
Love that. What is one thing you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
So in acquisitions, it's all about relationships. So you really have to know the brokers on a personal level. So one thing that we've started is really keeping track of communication and points of contact with brokers. And then one thing also that we're implementing this year is always doing a celebration with our brokers after we close the deal. We failed to do that in the past. You know, we're kind of looking to them because we're like, hey, you sold us this deal, you got a commission, you should take us out to dinner. Maybe, maybe not. But what I want is them to remember us the next time a deal comes up. And so really focusing on that. And then we're moving into new markets. So we're moving to Texas and Florida. And so we have just added an acquisitions associate under me. And so that's one thing I will say to keep on your game is replace yourself as soon as possible in the company with an employee. Because, you know, we're passiveinvesting.com, right? I didn't start this to have a job. I started this to have a flexible lifestyle and sustainable income for my family to come. And so the sooner you can replace yourself in the process, the better and the faster you can scale. Because then you can just duplicate yourself over and over. And you can only do so much in a day. But, you know, I can hire five people that do what I do. And now they're doing five times what I'm able to do.
Right. That's awesome. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm a Christian and, you know, I go to church. And so I believe in, you know, helping out in many areas. You know, we give tithe, I give to missionaries. So we support several missionaries on a monthly basis personally. And then we like to give to the school that our children go to and to also to the church. So, you know, Dan and I, we both go to the same church and our kids go to the same school. So if there's a project that needs done, we'll, you know, help out where we can. And we really enjoyed being able to do that. And, you know, I'm a believer in, I was not given what I have for my enjoyment. I'm given what I have to help other people. And, you know, material things and money, I've lost it all. And I have had, so I've had and I've had not. And so money is very not the point. So That's one thing I'll pass along is don't make money the object of what you're doing.
Right, right. That's great. That's great. Brandon, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Yeah, so you can go to our website, passiveinvesting.com. You can email me at brandon@passiveinvesting.com. I'll be glad to email you back. You can also check out some of our other products. The biggest one now, you mentioned fix and flips. We have rehabwallet.com, and that's a hard money lending service. So if you're looking to close your fix and flip project, be sure to check us out. We are mostly in the Southeast, you know, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina area, but we'd love to talk to you about that. We have a great mortgage team on the back end there, so check us out there as well.
Awesome. Brandon, thanks so much for your time. Certainly appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Samuel.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.